I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. February is Black History Month, and all this month, we decided to speak with African Americans on the cutting edge, innovators who are excelling in the so-called STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math. Now, you've probably heard of string theory and supersymmetry, but it all might sound like science fiction. Well, today we are joined by a physicist who assures us that it is not fiction at all. He has spent his career researching it, and better yet, he can even explain it to those of us who are, let's say, a little science challenged. Sylvester James Gates Jr., or Jim, as he prefers, is the John S. Toll Professor and Director of the Center of the String and Particle Theory at the University of Maryland. Earlier this month, he was awarded the National Medal of Science by President Obama. That is the highest honor in science given by the U.S. government. So we thought this would be a great time to talk with Professor Gates, and he's with us now. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good day.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was quite exciting to be with the president during the award ceremony in the East Room of the White House.
I was going to ask about that. At this stage of your career, do honors like that still mean something?
Are you serious? Of course they mean something. You know, I got my PhD when I was 26, and I've been doing science ever since. I'm now 62 years old. But I have pursued the doing of science in a very individualistic way. And so to have this kind of validation of my efforts, which have not been the kinds that garnered great popular support among physicists, but have been, one person described it as idiosyncratic. But to have the medal means that some of the best physicists in the world have said, wow, Jim is doing something interesting, and it might even be important.
You know, you've given us a lot to think about there, because you have been a twofold loner, if I can just use that term, because I can't think of a better one at the moment. I mean, you are the first African-American to hold an endowed chair in physics at a major U.S. research university, and as well, your area of study is one that for a long time you were kind of very much on your own path there. And I was interested in whether those two experiences are related in any way.
Sure. So one of my heroes is, his name is Albert Einstein. And I'm going to paraphrase him, but one of the things he said was that being an outsider means that one can often carry the seeds of a slightly different viewpoint, which enabled innovation, so that you might actually have a slight advantage. Some of that has played out in my life and career. That, in fact, has, from my perspective, been the reason why I found things that others haven't seen.
When did you realize that science was your destiny?
It starts in 1954, when I was 4 years old. My dad was in the U.S. Army. One day, my mother took me to see a movie. The title of the movie is Spaceways. And in this movie, I saw people in spacesuits. I saw rocket launches and countdowns. And for whatever reason, it just caught my four-year-old imagination. So I'm told that that evening, I tried to come home and explain it all to Dad. By age 8, we were actually living in El Paso, Texas, on the Fort Bliss Army base. And one day, Dad, remembering his son's interest in rockets, bought home some books on space travel written by Willie Ley, who had a series of such books for young people. And I realized that those tiny dots of light in the night sky were places to which one might travel. Mm. Also, I had my own personal Big Bang, because since they were so small, I got a sense of how large the entire universe must be. And so being a scientist and being an astronaut were consciously born in me when I was 8 years old in Fort Bliss.
Mm. You know, which brings me to something interesting, because one of the things you're known for within the world of science and beyond it is your ability to explain things in terms that the rest of us can understand. And here you are in explaining string theory in 30 seconds. This is one of the most viewed videos. It would talk about going viral. Here it is.
Imagine that you had a yardstick. If you cut it into 10 equal pieces and throw away 9, you'll go from something this big to that big. Take that remaining thing, cut it into 10 equal pieces, throw away 9, keep 1. You go from a yardstick to the size of my fingernail. If you do this process 10 times, you get to the size of the atom. Suppose you did that, say, 35 times. What's left in our universe? Well, we have no instruments to measure that. And so people like me have been working on a piece of mathematics called string theory and superstring theory to answer that question.
Well, thank you for that. Your ability to explain things like that, is that a gift or is that something that you had to learn?
I think it's something I had to learn, actually. And again, I've been very, very fortunate in my career. I have had the chance to interact with lots of tremendous figures, people who I consider my science heroes, such as Richard Feynman. One thing Feynman said, and I can't remember the exact quote, he said, you know, you ought to be able to explain to the guy on the bar stool next to you what you're doing. And if you can't, you don't understand it yourself. I came to realize that he had a serious point, which is, for my kind of science, where it's all mathematics, we're not the kind of people that wear the white lab coats and turn the knobs and have the boiling liquids and all that stuff. We just do mathematics. And you have to have kind of a pristine understanding of the ideas behind the mathematics. And that's what I think Feynman's statement was illustrating, even though I didn't understand it at the time. Then in 1988, the chairman of the physics department at Maryland, Dr. Xuan Liu, made a challenge. He said, we're going to have an open house, and we want you to talk to the public about string theory. And I said, oh, my goodness, come on, that's impossible. No one can do that. We are not even sure what it is ourselves. And he sort of looked at me with a twinkle in his eye and said, I'm confident that you can find a way to do this. So I did. This was long before Brian Greene had done his marvelous work in The Elegant Universe. And here I was, went out on the stage. And at some point I realized that a large part of my own understanding of the mathematics was actually tied up with images that I created in my mind. I like to tell people that when people like me write mathematics, it's as if you're watching an author create a story with characters in the story. Authors will often say that if you create a character, eventually they want to tell you a story. Well, that's sort of what happens with mathematics. And I realized that that part of the process was something that I could relate to other people very effectively. And I have worked at it a lot to learn how to do that.
Jim Gates is a physicist. He is a professor at the University of Maryland. He is also the recipient of the National Medal of Science, and he was kind enough to join us today with a very busy schedule at the University of Maryland's College Park campus. Professor Gates, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, no problem at all. Thank you for the possibility to speak to your audience.